Kevin Miller in the morning, KIDO Talk Radio. Our great friend Dave Petzo joining us, the Petzo Center, Petzo Financial. A lot of things in the news today. Let's start with a big one. The New York Times has done a story called Who Owns the West? And you and I have talked about this quite some time. You have a lot of these billionaire landowners, most notably in this piece, Dave Petzo, the Wilkes brothers. Now, it's funny, the Wilkes brothers, they financially back Prager University. They financially back the Daily Signal. And, you know, I was joking once. I go, well, you know, they could snap this company up in a minute. And then one of my liberal colleagues here, which is just about everybody in the building but myself, said, well, that'd be good if the Wilkes brothers bought KIDO Talk Radio because you'd be the only safe one. And for once, that would be great. However, and these guys are self-made. Both of them didn't graduate high school. They lived or were born in a goat shed, not making this up. And they're billionaires because of fracking. And they, along with a lot of other people, are buying a ton of land across the West. Apparently now, according to this article, they own 700 acres across several states, particularly in Idaho. You've got the issue involving property rights. Now, you like to get out and do that outdoor things, right? You hike,
I do.
You do all the, you know.
Did this weekend.
You're an action adventure Dave Petzo kind of guy.
Yeah, in disguise, yes.
Exactly. Well, no, I think you would be our version of the modern day G.I. Joe here on the Kevin Miller Show, okay?
Okay, all right.
Certainly more than your humble rotund host over here. So you've got these people coming into Idaho, buying land. You've got 20,000 people from California, even more from the state of Washington coming in.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean, considering the federal government owns 37% of our land?
Yep.
Then you have big money coming and buying the land. You're a capitalist. Can you make sense of this puzzle that seems to be appearing before us?
You know, it's not just the terrible conservatives that are buying up land. Ted Turner owns, what, half of Montana or something like that. There's a lot of land barons out west because land is cheap if you get out away from the cities. And it is cheap, and they can buy a lot of it. I think it's great that we have a mix of public and private land. All public land means no access, depending on the political party, to get resources, to have access to the wilderness. I know in just my lifetime here in Idaho, just my lifetime going up to the Pauley Bemis Ranch, that we've seen from when it was okay to take a raft out of the ranch and they'd pick you up in a jet boat and take you back. You could do that. Now you can't do that at all. Then it went from that to then you could only come in that way and then or leave that way. Now you can't even get in a jet boat without a permit every day.
Right.
Why? Because the Forest Service, they never say it.
Now, that's a government thing, but we're talking about these
private... No, but the combination, I'm afraid if the government had all the property, that this is the kind of thing that would happen all the way through.
Now, let me ask you a liberal progressive question.
Yeah.
Which is weird because every time you come in, I turn into liberal. But look,
that is a little weird, Kevin. Yeah.
For entertainment purposes only, if it was given up to the private folks... Would they be better stewards of the land? The argument from conservationists is, well, if you give it to the private people, they're going to build all these things and destroy public land. It'll either be dirt bike trails or there'll be massive condos and it'll be only available for the rich, kind of like Sun Valley.
Right. Well, the answer is, of course it won't, because they're the good stewards of the land. The best steward would be a rancher or a farmer who is trying to have it for generation after generation, right? But they're pushed out. But, Kevin, I think this balance that we have between private and public is really a good balance where you still have multi-use, meaning private. And, again, as we see the public lands being taken away from people like me that had every right to be there 30 years ago, now I can't be there. I can't take a raft into a property that I own. I think it's really ridiculous.
Well,
but anyway.
You build upon that, though. Now you have the rich landowners coming in and cutting off public roads that people need to go to their homes.
Yes. They can't do that. And we do have laws to protect us against that. They're right-of-way laws.
But they're doing that, and they've been exposed. And it's kind of crazy when you think about it. Now, we've had people that have reported in that there have been people with guns monitoring these things, ex-Special Forces people, that don't share the Idaho way.
Correct. Well, and it's no different than the folks. It is different. I get that. They broke the law, the folks in Oregon, who the ranchers that pushed back against the federal government. But you can't do that. if you're pushing back against private, then at least we have laws to push back against that. What I'm trying to get at, Kevin, is I don't think that having the lands in private hands necessarily is bad. And I mean, I don't mean all of it. I mean some of it, where we do have developments, we have a building population, and we do want to have access, meaning let's say we have people, and again, I'm not trying to go to the ridiculous extreme, but if we have people who are handicapped or are infirmed in some way, they can't go hiking 7 miles up a trail. They simply can't. So we need to have places they can go to see the beauty, to fish, to do all kinds of things, and that takes development.
Our great friend Dave Petzo joining us here, but it's getting national attention, and it's an issue that continues to percolate here with the listeners, and you know, you just have to wonder the future of the state. On one hand, you have the feds. On the other hand, you have the rich people coming in from out of state. Does there need to be some type of limit on how much land they can buy? There you love it, some government intervention.
Yeah, some more.
That's right up your alley.
Way to go, Mr. Lib. I know, just like you said, we need more government. Every time we get together, you tell people that. Kevin, I don't think we need more. I think it's fine. And I tell you what, if Ted Turner bought it, nobody would have said anything. And Ted Turner did buy thousands, maybe millions of acres over a 20 and 30 year period, and nobody says anything about it. You get a couple of guys who are self-made, and become billionaires, and now it's a big problem. So I really think it's just a political problem. It's not a problem. And we will, because people are people, have problems with people shutting down a road that they shouldn't shut down. We're going to have litigation. We have litigation nonstop against the government, nonstop. The government sued us so many times up there at the Pauley Bemis because they want a resort tax, even though it's not a resort.
That's different, though, from the private people coming in.
It's not different. It's still dealing with people who are a bunch of boneheads and doing the wrong thing. And sometimes you have to push back, and that's why we have laws.
If all of a sudden you can't get into your home and it's going to take 3 years to litigate, there's a high level of frustration.
That is a very high level of frustration. I would agree with that, Kevin.
Between you and the Wilkes brothers, but I digress.
And when the government shuts a road and you don't have access, it's not 3 years. It's going to be 30 years.
Right. But again, that's been going on for quite some time. The Wilkes brothers... I just think we're going to agree to disagree. Let's move on here.
All right.
We're sounding like the two guys on the Muppet stage there, the guys in the balcony. Dave Petzo joining us, Kevin Miller in the morning here, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Another big move here, and we talked a little bit about this last week, and it seems that we're the only ones talking about it, this issue with Micron, the future of Micron. Mm-hmm. You've got the lawsuit now where people are saying they're not getting their raises. You have people leaking to me, hey, my relatives have worked there for years. They've never seen anything like this. You've got people coming in that are friends of people. You've got foreign workers coming in, replacing Americans. Now, you say there'll always be like a Micron shell here.
I don't say that. I am hopeful that that's always true because it's very expensive to build, very difficult to find a place to build where you have backup energy, you have backup water. It needs to have redundancy systems, and this is where a big part of their R&D is done. So I don't think they're going to be leaving anytime soon. I would be surprised if the administration stays here at all. I don't really think it is. I think we primarily are now in Silicon Valley. They have a big facility down there now that they bought, and Sanjay does not I'm told doesn't even come here much at all. So they've moved their headquarters down there, and that's what their intention is at the highest level, I think. And, yes, they have cut a lot of jobs, and it's changed. New administration.
But on the other hand, you take a look at Micron. There are recent purchases. The state of Virginia gets the brand-new facility. The company, or the country of, what is it, Taiwan or Hong Kong, one of them, they get the big brand-new research facility. And in Idaho, that launched this company.
Yep.
That so many people worked there, that didn't work there, that are coming back. What does Idaho really get? And, you know, the workers inside of there, highly paid, doing well. But you have to wonder their influence and whether or not it's waning.
Yeah. Well, the influence is waning. There's no question about it. With a new administration there, they're literally, I don't believe there's anybody in the upper administration, upper ranks at all that was there before. So it's been a complete changeover, very intentional to sweep everybody out and move on. I don't know where Micron goes from here because it's hard to gauge its past history to its current, as far as a stock, as far as, you know, profits and things like that, because we don't have the same people. We don't have the same drivers there at all. So it is a very different ball game, and I think we're going to have to wait and see over the next couple of years what happens with Micron. But they're clearly shrinking their presence here, Kevin. It's not good news.
How different was the Treasure Valley, let's say, when you first got here, or maybe even before, when you had a thriving HP,
yeah,
and then a thriving Micron,
mm-hmm.
well before Silicon Valley was as big as it is today. But, I mean, here you had the, you know, HP deciding, we're going to move to Idaho, we're going to have this great facility. People are so proud of that. And working for HP and its remarkable history.
Yep.
And here you have Idaho homegrown Micron. You know, well before many of the people that, you know, like myself that have come here recently.
Yeah.
What type of world was it then as compared to now?
Well, I don't think when I moved here we were 100,000 people. We weren't. I think it was about 80. And
but you had these big conglomerates.
We did. No, but more than that, Kevin, there's some other companies that you're missing that really were the foundation of this. We had MK. Morrison Knudsen Company, the made the Hoover Dam and many other unbelievable projects right here. And we watched them get disintegrated by a CEO. With Boise Cascade, although Boise Cascade was a poorly run company, there's no question about it. The stock never went anywhere, but it was a huge presence in this area. So we had Fortune 500 companies that were located here in Boise that were huge drivers of industry. And then, as you point out, HP had 5,000 people they came here initially with. That's a lot. And they spun off so many little businesses, including Micron. The founders came from HP roots and many, many other little ones. I'm sorry, my brain is apparently not working as well as it used to, but there were several I could name that became public companies that from their roots at Hewlett-Packard. It was a huge thing. So your point is very valid. Technology was big in this area, but we also had basic industry that was very big, and world headquarters were right here in Boise.
Right.
It was a big deal, and it really helped our community. You think, and now, of course, Albertsons. I mean, how can we even forget about that?
Well, again, and of course, we still have the history of Velma Morrison right here in our building.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
More coming up next with Dave Petso, Kevin Miller, KIDO Talk Radio. Welcome back to KIDO Talk Radio, 107.5 FM, 580 AM. Dave Petso, Kevin Miller. So, big news out of Vegas. Eldorado Resorts will buy Caesars in a deal valued more than $17 billion, creating one of the biggest entertainment casino giants. Your thoughts?
Unbelievable. I believe Eldorado is the Eldorado out of Reno. So that's quite an interesting takeover, if you will. It shows you the downfall, how difficult things are when you get too much debt. For example, Caesars really almost went under a couple times here, and it was a much larger company. Eldorado hung in there, didn't pile on a lot of debt, was basically family-owned for years, and is now taking over the Caesars company, which is global. It's actually global. Eldorado wasn't. So we're
right.
talking about a little company buying out a big one.
Right. So
big one with, I mean,
will
resources
there be cutbacks or anything, do you think? I mean, will they
in the administrative office
turn down the slots tables? I mean, I don't go to those facilities, so I don't know anything about that.
Well, that's the cool thing about it, Kevin. You don't have to go. And if people do go and they don't like the deal they're getting anymore, they stop going. And that's what's happened to casinos everywhere. You have to have a value, value proposition, or people won't go. And so it keeps the casinos very competitive. Whether you how much you lose is up to you. But at the same time, they are reasonably competitive. I doubt they're going to go in and make the slot machines pay less because people will just magically not show up anymore.
Now, what do you make of the gambling industry? We have Nevada, we've got Reno, we've got Las Vegas. Now, you're a Reno guy, though. Are you a Vegas guy as well?
Or? No. Kevin, in the years past, everybody's gone to Vegas a number of times. You go on the strip and I enjoyed it. Particularly in the morning, I love to get up early. Not early, but it's not like I went to bed super early, but you go and run the strip where there's no people. You just see everything, and it's really kind of a fun thing. But it wore me out. It wears you out. I mean, it's such a dive into the sewer, if you will, and I don't. For those that love Vegas, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be insulting, but it just doesn't. I don't like the idea of people reaching across children and handing them pictures of scantily clad women to go seek prostitution. Excuse me, they weren't really escorts. Sorry, not really doing that. It was for escorts.
Boy, this is a lot of information. Maybe we should move on from this one. Well, what do you make of when you take a look at these gambling things, though? Because it's a part of it. You have the Coeur d'Alene tribe. We have people trying to legalize gambling here in this state. You have Jackpot, which I haven't been to. There are a lot of bus trips here. People seem to like the quaintness of Jackpot. They seem to do a good job. They bring in the shows. But the gambling industry in general, but you know, how does a place, let's say, like a Jackpot compete with the others? Is it
honestly, I don't know, and I don't think they do very well. You know, I honestly don't. It's something in years past, I'd gone down to Jackpot back in the day. I can't think of his name, the guy that started Cactus Pete's.
Was it Pete?
He got in an auto accident, but he lived for years and ran that company and tried to expand a little bit. But it's very difficult, I think, in a little place like that to compete, to keep up the properties the way you want to. So I haven't been there in a long, long time either, Kevin, but I've watched the gambling industry as an investment, and it has been a terrible investment. And it's
What do you make of that, considering all the money that goes into gambling?
Absolutely.
Certainly they spend a lot of money on advertising, on entertainment.
They do. It's an incredibly expensive thing to run, and if you do anything wrong, meaning if you have too much debt at the wrong time, we have a recession and people don't come as much, won't pay as much for a room, you can turn a successful operation upside down. I saw it with the Esquagua's Nugget, where it's a family-owned operation for years. They got too much debt, and it crumbled them. Debt is the thing that takes these under. Caesars did the same thing. MGM was great in its day and had to kind of shrink back up. We see companies that overexpand, but the reason why it really got tough is because you can have Indian casinos everywhere, and so people just can basically drive down the street. They put up these little boxes, right, with slot machines, and they're real cheap to run if you have these automated slot machines, and they're very inexpensive to run. And then all you have to do is have a little entertainment to draw people in. The casino industries draw so much entertainment, but it's so very expensive to have those huge facilities that every little thing that can go wrong does at some point, and they don't necessarily have the reserves to hold it up.
While the people are leaving, so Dave Petzo, let's take a look at a couple other big stories here. Your Bitcoin now is back above 11 grand. The bubble seems to be reinflating. I think it got down to almost $4,000 per Bitcoin. Now it's back up to 11. Bitcoin refuses to go away. And then you have the announcement last week that Facebook is coming out with its own cyber currency.
Facebook and many other big companies are putting in $10 million each. I mean, many. And I believe a total of something like $200 million to develop this new cyber currency that they want to try to have other vendors utilize for safety reasons, all the ease. And also transaction costs, because it costs money to swipe that credit card, 2 to 3% for most all vendors. And so that's just a lot of money that comes off. If you have less friction, you have more profits. And that's what they're really shooting for. I'm a believer in the technology of the digital currency. I'm just not a believer in Petcoin, if you will.
Right. But again, you have to wonder if all of a sudden it would just go away with the stroke of a keyboard.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question, Kevin. I mean, everybody says, no, you can't hack into it, and that's the whole point. We're very diligent with cybersecurity because we have to be. It's a frightening thing, and we do everything we can. We hope that, you know, knock on wood, we don't have a breach, but it is one of those things where you are so keyed onto it. Anything that promises better security is something we all pay attention to, and I think that this, you know, the digitalization of this, the blockchain is what it's called, is a phenomenal thing.
Speaking of phenomenal, finally, Bernie Sanders will unveil a plan to cancel $1.6 trillion of student loan debt.
Wow. What a guy. I mean, you just take a pen and you just make it all go away. Wonderful. I heard that he was going to do it all with just taxing a little bit on stocks and bonds trading. That's like $7 trillion, apparently, of swiping the pen and just taxing a little bit on stocks and bonds. It's, you know, it's a very important lubricant to our capitalist system is stock and bond trading. And you start throwing a little bit more dust in the engine, it's not going to run as well. And I really am concerned about that. I'm also concerned from the standpoint of, what about those people that are stupid enough to save money and pay for it themselves? You know, I mean, it seems a little bit odd to me that, you know, are they going to mail a check to those folks, perhaps? I doubt it. And what do we do if everything's free? Do people plan? You know, people don't sit around and say, I don't want my kids to go to college. They do. But if they don't do anything about it, it's nothing more than wishing a magic fairy dust would come by and make that happen. People that plan should be rewarded for planning. And I just don't understand, not penalized for it by sitting around having to pay ridiculous high taxes because they made plans to take care of things in their life. But this $7 trillion idea is absurd. So I'm hopefully continues to run on that platform.
Dave Pezzo, catch him Saturdays 8 to 10. Dave, thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Have a great day.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Wow, what a pile of stuff today. I mean, what, the market has its best first half since 1997? That's quite a while ago. Best first half, up 17%. In spite of China's slowdown, retail sales surge. But we're still worried about the economy as bonds are near 2%. We got a lot to talk about today. In my mind, Micron earnings as well. Micron's very involved in this China dispute. Interesting market, to say the least. Interesting times. And so, you know, again, in our segment in the next hour, we talk about what I'm thinking about, because I'll preface this. I mean, what I'm thinking about right now, and I'll go into in more details, is the economy really slowing down? We've got interest rates that indicate that. We got all kinds of pundits racing around. The only thing propping the market up is the Fed. Really, guy, we've just heard this over and over and over for like more than 10 years now. Stop it. Just stop it. Somebody come up with something new. Like, the United States is the greatest country in the world, innovating, creating, and making amazing things. And just we're astounding. We do everything in the world. We're like the good guys. And the good guys win, right? Anyway. I'll talk about that more in the second hour, but again, the market touches its all-time highs again, has its best first half since 1997, in spite of the trade war, the thing that'll end everything. I don't even know what pundits talk about now. It's thank goodness. If you're a talking head, you never have to be right. I mean, you never, ever, ever have to be right. You just have to sound smart, tug on your beard, look into the camera, serious dude over there, and then you got it nailed. Just talk doom and gloom all the time, and you're okay. Even though doom and gloom doesn't happen, it's okay, because you move on to the next doom and gloom thing. And, wow, he's really smart. It's really good. Okay. And if you are on the left side of the political spectrum and you just have to constantly bash and talk about things, well, it's okay to be always wrong. It's okay about Russian collusion and on and on and on and on and on and on and on. But guess who's still in the White House? Guess which country is still doing really, really well? In spite of being the only country that's raised interest rates. If it was all the Fed, right? So things are going pretty well. And again, I'll touch on that more in the next hour as we kind of dive into what's going on here, right? But I got kind of this funny thing that just struck me this week, too, I wanted to share. Because it just shows how weird our times are, right? And I don't mean to bog down. It's easy to beat up on San Francisco because they're just absolutely flaming nut jobs. I don't know if there's an intelligent, real human being in the entire city. There has to be, because you don't want to throw everybody in the same bucket. But certainly all the news that ever comes out of San Francisco is, wow, either I'm completely insane or they are. Because it's not like a difference of opinion. It's weirdness, right? And so, but here, this is the one that that just really strikes me. Now, you can smoke in San Francisco, right? I mean, which is clearly not a very healthy thing to do. You can certainly smoke pot. They encourage it, of course. And, of course, if you want to shoot up on the sidewalks, and you're not going to be bothered at all. That's not illegal stuff. But are you ready for this? E-cigarettes are. And it just got, like they're banned. I mean, I know it's not illegal for you to, you know, like drive outside the city and go to a store and get some and bring them back and smoke them. But you can't sell e-cigarettes. You can only sell pot and apparently drugs and regular cigarettes, which all the above are clearly like far, far worse for you. In fact, e-cigarettes are really theoretically a safer solution to inject yourself with nicotine, right? And I just like, wow, this is... San Francisco, weirdly, is the only city in the country that does this. But it is just bizarre. Where we choose to take a stand, let's say health-wise, it wouldn't be with the homeless people defecating on the street. It wouldn't be cigarettes. No, it wouldn't be drugs. Absolutely not. People are free to do that, but no. E-cigarettes, that's where we draw the line. This is it right here. And I just find this absolutely astounding and bizarre as to what different little pockets do around the country. It's just amazing to me. And we were all just like, what the heck? How does this make sense on any planet? But this is how chaotic our world is. And as we try to sift through it, I really firmly believe that this is the kind of thing that has nothing to do with finance. I totally get that. I totally get that it has nothing to do with finance, that we are talking about infanticide, for example, with all the way up to and even post, if the baby's still alive, let's go ahead and whack it. It's okay. This is weird stuff to us, I think, us dummies in flyover country, at least. And it really affects us all the way around. I hear it in people's discussions. It's like, where is this world coming to? What's going on? I don't understand. It all feeds into the weirdness that makes us feel like things aren't really very good, are they? And then the constant jibber-jabber of the fact that you're not doing as well as the one percenters. Therefore, your life must suck. Don't you understand? That's the narrative. You foolish person. You can't be happy if you're not a one percenter. We've got to get them. And then I'll take charge and make sure all the right people get their money reallocated to them. It's kind of weird where we're like every day beaten into this, like, it's not very good. No, it just isn't very good out there. It's not. Watch and listen to me, because I'll tell you how bad you should be feeling, even though economically, you've never been better. Even though wages are rising at the fastest rate, especially on the lowest end, I believe in our lifetimes. Certainly, absolutely, certainly, since we had the high inflation days of the 1970s, which wasn't real wages, and that's all that matters. And so really, I just don't know that there's a time, but I do know that they're growing very fast, much faster than the top end. First time ever, we're seeing blue-collar wages rise faster than white-collar. That's really cool. That's a shift. That's a change. But remember, you can't be happy about that. You just don't know how bad you have it. So stop smiling, you dummy. You don't know how to think. We'll teach you how to think. So as we look at these things that all kind of come at us, I think it's just hard. It's really, really hard. Our healthcare system is horrible. I know it is, and it is. But you know why? Because it's Obamacare that makes it horrible. When you have a $12,000 deductible and you pay $12,000 a year for health insurance, what is it you have? But don't worry, we'll have millionaires, and what we'll do is we're going to kind of slowly figure out how to get money out of their accounts so they can live off of it without actually showing any real income, and then they can have subsidized health care. That's not a broken system. No. That's a perfect example of government intrusion in our life. Healthcare wasn't great, but it certainly wasn't this bad until the government got a hold of it. And the VA, of course, has run so well, we want to do that more of. Everything seems weird. So it seems broken. But here's what's really happening, and that's why it's so hard. I ran into somebody this week. It was very interesting. It was just one of those funny things. So you know, just a new person, right? A new person in your life, right? That's kind of floating through. Oh, so you do a radio program. I said, yeah, what kind of do you focus on? And I thought a minute, well, finance, of course. And it's like, but it could be a deeper question. You're like, what part of finance? Are you an equity indexed annuity pimp? No, we don't talk about equity. Well, we do. We try to get people to avoid these horrific, monstrous, terrible things. We try. But at the same time, you know, so what aspect of it is, are you doing? And I thought, well, here's the interesting part. I try. All of us, Jennifer and Tom and Erica, we all try to get across a message against what the constant feed is. And that's not, you can call me a Pollyanna if you want, but it's not a Pollyannish message to simply say, this is the best first half since 1987. The market's up an astounding 17%. Period. Corporate profits are at record levels. In spite of all of the talk of trade, of a trade war, it's all the end of the world. The farmers are going to die. The this is going to die. The that's going to die. We don't want a trade war. But that's in spite of the fact that we were supposed to die. All of this is happening. We have people at the lowest wage level, right? Blue collar wages are rising faster than white collar. Black, Hispanic, female, unemployment is at record low levels. Not low levels, record low. Never been better. That's all. We're just trying to get across, not a Pollyannish, well, everything's okay, it's okay, take a toke, it's going to be fine. No, the real story is that optimism is the only realism. And it's hard to carve through that because there's just not very many people that have that message. So we try to get people to get that message across. That it isn't all bad all the time. That life is pretty good. Life is abundant. And if we live like it's not abundant, that's wrong. You see the world incorrectly. We're going to run out of oil. No, we didn't. The world is going to be orange. It isn't orange. The oceans are going to be horrible and we won't have any fish. They're fishing out the fisheries. I know, I've heard that story since I was a little kid. How is it we have more fish? How is it the world isn't orange with another couple billion people since a couple billion? That's an actual real number. More than there were 30 or 40 years ago. But we still continue to plug into the same narrative that everything is limited. It's not. It's abundant. We all can have more. We all have. All of history says we can and do. We don't seem to run out. Why? Well, technology is a big deal. We don't run out of food because we can produce more. I mean, the list goes on, but we don't see it that way. We think linear, and we can't stop it because we're human. You can stop it when you stop and think about it, and you realize that whatever's happening today won't be happening tomorrow. It's hard, but it's not impossible. It's not impossible at all. Just because one and one and one, these are the data points, it doesn't mean you can project a straight line. In fact, I would argue it's never a straight line. It's either rising exponentially or it's collapsing exponentially. Always. And yet we teach kids the same thing. The world's going to end. Why bother? Why bother? What is our message? Our message is simple. The world isn't going to end. And why you aren't investing, I'll never understand, because it's the way to wealth. It's so simple, it's silly. It shouldn't be legal to do what we do. Put $150 away? Don't do anything? And in 40 years, it grows to $1.2 million? Are you kidding me? Doesn't that seem weird? You mean I don't have to get up and go do this? I have to do that. I have to manage this. I have to find the greatest. No, that's the S&P 500 the last 40 years. Seriously. Where'd that come from? A cup of coffee a day. $5 a day. Everybody has that. Pretty crazy, isn't it? But we argue and fight about, is it really the Fed or Fed doing this? And it's an insane bunch of arguments. And I think all of this insanity, in all of our society makes us think wrong about everything. And in finance, it just spills over where people are like, now, you know, the future isn't as bright as it. Yeah, it is. It is. I heard the same thing 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. It's just not the same. No, it's not the same. It's not the same. And we don't like change, but we have to try to rise above and see through the complete insanity that these places are. The San Franciscos and all the homeless situation in Seattle. But they're all so kind. No, they're not. They're phony. They're phony baloney. But that's not the real people that make the whole country work. There's a bunch of phony, arrogant sacks that don't do anything. Pretend to. Oh, yes, we'll have to have another fundraiser for the homeless. We don't want to solve the problem, but let's throw more money at it. We'll all feel better about it. Okay, groovy. Like all of the problems. We just need another. We don't need another government program. We just need to fund the ones that aren't working. We need to give them more. We don't want to change them. Gosh, no. Hell, heck no. Don't change those. Just keep giving more money. It's like education. Education isn't working. Okay, it needs more money. Okay, should we change some things? What, are you nuts? You must be a racist, bigot, idiot. That's what you are. You hate children, don't you? No, I just was asking a question about, shouldn't we examine why it doesn't work before we just throw money at it? No, you hate children, don't you? You must hate the whole education system. You just want people to be stupid, don't you? Well, that's an intelligent argument, but it's what we are doing. We do this all the time throughout all of the things, and it makes all of us stop and go, this isn't working. Yes, it is, because through all that, the corporations are working, the companies are working, technology is driving forward, and the economy is really growing. It really is. And that's why we have to think differently about it. Don't listen to all the noise, the negative noise. Or what you do is you sit out waiting for what?
Well, I think the market's too high. It's going to crash.
Why?
I don't know, because it just does once in a while.
Okay. And it goes to all-time highs all of the time. Do you want a once in a while to put up with or an all the time? Right? Crazy. All right. Sorry, Ray. I got to go get a break here. I went kind of way overboard here. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, give us a call at 580-5436-580-KIDO. Hello and good morning. I would love to have you join us on the phone and, of course, email. Our email is dave@petsofinancial.net. The number here is 580-5436-580-KIDO. Micron, interesting, it was caught in the crosshairs of the tariffs, right? Well, they've had certain workarounds, as the government has, for farmers. Not going to let the farmers take the brunt of the trade war. Not going to have the tech companies curl up and die. But believe it or not, over the weekend, over this past week, Micron announces earnings that are better than expected. Better than expected. Not great earnings, still shrinking. Down a ton over last year. And the stock surges. No trade deal, just stock searched. Pretty amazing. But believe it or not, since and it kept going, right? It wasn't just the one-day bump. The stock just kept going, up another couple percent on the last couple of days of the week. 15% boost since Wednesday's announcement. Astounding. Tuesday after the close, anyway. But what an incredible surge. And, of course, that took all of the chip stocks up because it's like, wait a minute, whoa, it's not as bad as people thought. Again, that's what permeates the news, is all doom and gloom. And so when you lift it up and say it's not as bad, it's not good, it's not as bad. That's what I think a lot of times we miss in the market is this idea that things have to be really good, they have to be perfect. They don't. Because in spite of not perfect, corporations adjust and are profitable. And because of human nature, we expect the worst in everything. Unfortunately, in people too. But we expect the worst. And I just don't want to be cynical and say, and we don't, you know, and we're not disappointed. That's crazy. We are disappointed because we're never right. It's not as bad as we think it is. And that's true. What does it say? Some ridiculous amount of worry is completely pointless and stupid. It never happens. But it internally destroys us. I just want to talk about the emotional side of this because it literally all of this negativity keeps people from investing. But we see Micron with just like, it's not as bad. Stock takes off. This happens all the time. I mean, all the time, where a company is not as bad, therefore it just rocks. It just rocks. We have to set ourselves to understand that no matter what we're being talked about, chances are overwhelming it's not anywhere near as bad as we think it is, especially when it comes to investing. People are always picking the doomsday scenario. They do. Fear drives it and can drive it to ridiculous prices. Okay, we got to take a break here. When we come back in the second hour, we're going to talk about what's on my mind, as if we don't do that anyway. But I love this segment. We'll talk to you after Fox News. Hello and good morning. Welcome to Hour 2 of Money Matters. And of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. That's not this station. Any broker dealers or anything like that. And the point of repeating that all the time is very seriously, these are opinions. And if we happen to talk about a stock positively or negatively, it doesn't mean you should be out buying or selling that. I don't know your portfolio, and I think that's absurd. If you will, I think that it's something to think about in this regard. Your portfolio needs to be built around what your objective is. Not, well, I wonder how I'm doing compared to the market. Am I up 17%? Well, you're not up 17% if it's an income portfolio designed to make sure that you don't run out of money before you run out of life. That has nothing to do with it. It's astounding how you people, because everybody knows stuff now. You've got online stuff. You're reading stuff. You know, Good Housekeeping, it used to do a mutual fund piece. I'm assuming now they're telling you what ETFs you ought to buy. I mean, seriously, it's everywhere. And when we pick up these little tidbits, it's sometimes like, is your portfolio performing as well as the market? Perhaps you need an overlook. And it's like, oh, man, I don't know. I look at my portfolio. I've got cash, and that's not earning much. I mean, gosh, and we're trying to draw some income here. And it's not comparable. And so we get into this weird situation of looking at it. And when you're thinking about, should I buy Apple? Yeah, Apple's a great company. I think you ought to own Apple. I don't think you should buy it today. I think you should have bought it ages ago. And I still think you should own it today. That's how I feel about Apple. Until things change at Apple. But as far as I can see, they're not changing. They continue to dominate. in what they do. But you could have traded out of it on at least 12 different warnings of iPhone sales collapsing. And you wouldn't own it today. With a split, at a split adjusted 1,000, you would have sold it at $50 ages ago. Ages ago. I mean, when we think of owning things, we don't think of owning them anymore. We think, is this a good buy? Oh, and iPhone sales are down. Sal, I better get out. Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, 10 baggers. Bye-bye, 15 baggers. Bye-bye, great investments. As Peter Lynch says, you have to have these great things to have an overall portfolio that works, because so many things don't work. Even after the most careful analysis, they don't. So we're not here to trade. We're here to help people, I think, as we talked about in the very first segment today, right, is see the world a little differently. It's in a dynamic, ever-improving way, rather than, it really is bad out there. I don't have it as good as Donald Trump does, so my life sucks. I know I'm living better than I ever did, but I got to worry about the one percenters. That's what they tell me. The morals, the ethics, the da-da-da-da-da of the whole wide world. I get it. It's changed. But we can't let it infect. We shouldn't let it infect our families, right, and our own lives. But we certainly don't want to govern our finances by all that negativity. And it sure hasn't paid. Hasn't paid the past year, the past 3 years, the past 5 years, the past 10 years, and so on. Because it never pays. So here's what I've been thinking, though. Are we slowing down? You know, this is the pondering thing now. I got a hard time. This one keeps coming back. If bonds are at 2%, right? The 10-year treasury is the bond rate. It sets every other bond rate. So that's it. If you're yielding more than 2% on a 10-year piece of paper, it's because there's risk. Risk of default, whatever. Okay? 2% sets all the global rates. 10-year treasury. U.S. treasury. So it's around 2, which has come down, 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 down. Well, has the Fed cut interest rates? Of course not. They have not. Not yet. Do they need to? Is the economy really slowing down? Because there are some signs, right? The global economy clearly is. Bonds are indicating it. And this is the part that disturbs me, not the global, because the fact of the matter is the U.S. leads the world doesn't lead the U.S. Now, there's multinationals, their earnings will slow down, of course, you know, the caterpillars of the world if global growth is slower. Of course, of course, of course. Does that have a big impact in the United States? No, it's so tiny, I don't even know how measurable that would be, right? You know, 0.1% on GDP, not much, right? It's not much. Yeah, but we export a lot. Okay, and we still will. It just won't be as fast. I mean, the fact that the global growth isn't as fast doesn't mean we stop exporting everything. We don't. It means some, selectively some of those, aren't growing as fast, which is... So when you hear the talking heads, global growth is the most frightening thing ever, it's like, now you can go, that guy's a bonehead. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's just talking his book. He wants the market to go down. He's talking it down. He's giving a data point that doesn't really matter. Doesn't have an effect. Or so tiny an effect, it's not even worth measuring. But here's the thing. This is the thing that we're really... that bothers me is that the bond market is betting on a slowdown. It really is. Or is it? And that's the question in my mind. Is it betting on that or betting on a Fed rate cut? Is it just following algorithms because things are going down right now? Because we have mixed data. It's not all 100% great, but I'll tell you what, this past week blew the socks off of the recession argument. Oh, don't worry. Don't worry about those economists. They'll all have their job. They were wrong. They're always wrong. It's okay. Just okay. As long as you're negative and wrong. it's okay. Because, again, you can just tug on your beard, stare at the camera, write a few notes. Every week I read this one thing, you know, because they're really good about just like the bullet point BS of the week. And I don't want to pick on them. Okay, it's T. Rowe Price. So T. Rowe Price's weekly global outlook, okay? Really, you know, it's not insightful. It just gives me some data that I might have missed through the week. And I quickly look at it. But I mean, my goodness, they are so negative. I mean, every week, it's like there are always an excuse why we went to all-time highs. So I'm kind of like, well, you know, it's due to this over here. It's not due to anything good happening. And traders are really worried about that. As the market goes up, I'm like, these guys they haven't met a nice thing in their life. I can't imagine living with that. Well, that was a pretty good meal, but, you know, it could have been better. We could have had, you know, lobster with that steak. Just like they're Eeyores. They never see good things. But here's the thing I want people to understand. If the economy is this really this slow, and you see why I'm having a struggle with this, if it's really deserved to be a 2% 10-year treasury, okay, because we're worried about the globe slowing, then why are retail sales up 10%? 10. Why was GDP revised up in the first quarter? Remember, it's supposed to be terrible. It was going to be flat. It was going to be zero. It's 3.1. I mean, the economists are so far off. I don't know what planet they were measuring. Right? Not all of them. There's a number of them that just nailed it, okay? But it's a small number because it's all about groupthink. It's all about groupthink. You don't lose your job if you're at J.P. Morgan and you say, things are slowing down and we, you know, muddle through with 1% or slower. We think we'll barely hang above zero this quarter. Oh, we're wrong. Oh, well, everybody's wrong. It's okay. 3 is a monstrous difference. 3. And this was 2 revisions later. It's a final revision. Both revisions were higher. We have the lowest unemployment claims in history. The lowest unemployment claims. Now, on top of that, we have the largest job force ever. Right? Meaning there's more chances of people not having jobs or putting in claims. Lowest ever. Lowest ever. So it seems like, right, that the economy's doing pretty well. I forget about the rest of the jobs reports. We all know how that's going, right? I mean, it's just incredible, right? But there are threats. There's no question about it. Okay? There's no question that the trade threat is there. But you see, what I'm saying is all of this data is in spite of the trade getting worse, the trade talks getting worse during this period. Not better. Not even on pause. Worse. The banning of Huawei, the great technology company for China, is being crushed. And we sell a lot of stuff to them. And we still get a print of 3.1 GDP. The only thing that I see out there that concerns me, other than the whack jobs trying to become president, and they don't really concern me because I think they're just so wacky. I think outside of the whack places in the United States, the big cities, I cannot believe that the real people think that these guys are onto something with, with their agenda, socialism. So I think we've seen enough time where trade is not going to be the issue. with this president, we don't have to worry about regulation and taxes increasing. We don't. But the concern I have is government spending. Still not good. Not good at all. Deficit keeps going, and we're not talking about. Now, this is why, in my mind, if we can get a strong enough Congress to tackle the reforms that are necessary to Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, entitlement, if you will. This would be, could be a boom that just doesn't look like it has an end. They all end, but it could be. That would be my hope. But then my biggest concern is government spending that nobody's dealing with. But as I look at this, I'm still trying to noodle on why are rates at 2%? It just doesn't make sense to my brain. It really doesn't. Not at all. Just having a hard time with that because people are putting real money there. So I'll leave you with this at the break. Jim, hang on. I'm going to take you on the other side of the break here. I think that the reason that interest rates are at 2 is a confluence of factors that says we have to have some bonds. What bonds do you buy? Do you buy the negative interest rates in Germany? Do we buy a bond in Italy that we're not, that it isn't really that safe, but yielding no more than the U.S., or do we pile money into the U.S., the strongest economy in the world? I think money just goes there because it's better than earning nothing somewhere else. 2 isn't great, but it's better than nothing. And we don't have inflation. So I that's the only thing that makes sense to me because I don't think it's a very good predictor at this point. It certainly was predicting a slowdown, but the data just doesn't confirm that at all. I mean, not at all. There are some pieces, if you want, a couple months ago that kind of came through a little weak. We had a weak jobs number last month. 1 month. But which one was it? Was it the two that were like way better than expected were outliers? Or is it this one, or is it all three? Because we don't want one data point. We want rolling multiple data points to average and see what direction we're going. Not grabbing onto one or two things. It's like I gave you the retail sales. I'm not talking about this month. I'm talking about year to date. Things have changed. They've changed a lot. A lot. Personal income is on fire. It's up 5%. Personal income on real numbers after inflation. And spending's up over 4%. These are simply great numbers and don't indicate at all that we're in a recession. Not even close. We're in an expansion, according to these. And this is data point after data point. So to me, anyway, I don't have the answer on this. This is just what pondering. Why are interest rates at 2%? I don't know. I don't think they're predicting a recession, though. All right, we got to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to grab Jim. We're going to hopefully grab you at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. Love to hear from you. Let's go right now to Jim. Jim, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Morning, Dave. How's it going?
Good. Very well, thank you.
Okay. Could you hold on a second? I got to call another line.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
All right. Okay, Jim. Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting. That's a first for us. That's for sure.
Are you there?
We are. Okay, go ahead, Jim.
I just called a friend that's at a class reunion. She said she'd call me back. Anyway, as we all know, economics and economists are a gray area. And you were talking about, like, analysts that predict, or maybe a better word would be guess, what a company is going to earn. And so all they've got, it seems to me, all they've got to do is guess low,
Right. And then when the stock does better, when the earnings better, then the stock goes up. Right?
You know, most companies are really good at managing their, if you will, expectations, right? So right. You, that's what they often call it. And when companies come out and they say, yeah, we think we're going to make, Apple's a classic example. If they think they're going to make a dollar a share, just to use a number, they actually think they're going to make more. They're always cushioning that. That's always a low ball number. Now, it doesn't mean they're not going to have a bad quarter and come in at 80 cents, right? But we all know for those companies that are very good at managing their expectations that they want to under promise and over deliver, and they do consistently. So
well,
many
that would be the thing. You know, I mean, it's going to look better than everybody thought, and things are, you know, whatever. In other words, rather than being as accurate as they can be, naturally, you know, gets a little low, you know, stands to reason. And it's the same thing with whatever. Well, everybody looks more at the micro stuff than the macro, right?
Correct. And that's,
they look at the data points. Trump tweets something, and the market reacts, kind of a thing.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right, and the market is driven, right? 80% of the trading now is done by machines, and they're run by algorithms. Well, the algorithm instantaneously does the micro things, right? To just like what's going on right this second, and it moves markets. So it does do that, but in the long run, and that's why I guess what I try to get through all the time, and what I try to get through to my own brain is that we have got to be thinking at a higher level about this. Because if we get caught in the minutiae day to day, we're missing the big picture, which is pretty rosy, and we're missing it big time. And so I think it's important.
You know, I would buy a company because I like the company, and what they're going to do in the near future is irrelevant, you know?
Right.
I mean, so you just buy something, and whatever comes in, whatever, just don't worry about it.
Well, I think that's a really good example of trying to find quality companies. But you want to own them. In other words, you pull the trigger when something temporary goes wrong because everybody overreacts.
Right.
And they drive the stock price down. In many cases, they can drive it down 10% in a day. You know, I mean, they really can, and they do. There was a company, 3M, not long ago. I mean, obviously, they've been around longer than anybody listening to this program, no matter how old you are. They've been around forever. I mean, great balance sheet, lots of products, not just post-it notes, but you know what I mean. They found that they're, because of the global slowdown that overseas, their sales were slowing much more than anticipated, right?
Well, so, I think 3M was the first stock I bought way back maybe 2009.
Mm.
And I remember, you know, they put out Scotch reel-to-reel tapes.
Right.
And I used to buy reel-to-reel tapes, so 3M really has a, you know, and I've owned them since then, and I know they've come down here and there, but whatever. I'm not going to sell them no matter what.
Right, and if you look at the actual income that it's produced since 1999, your income per share is probably around 50%. I'm not joking, right?
Uh-huh.
Based on what you paid for the stock and how they've raised the dividends pretty much every year for the last 30 years. So it is an amazing company. But my point is if you want to own 3M, what an incredible opportunity to do so after they make a bad announcement. Now, what we have to, we talked about this not too long ago, though, we've got to be careful with that because you don't want to, what we want to try to identify as well, what we think about all the time, right? Back to my thought process is what we're thinking about is what things are in secular decline, what I don't want to own. I don't care at what price because they're on the way out. Okay.
Right.
It's like autos. I just, no, not till it's clear what's going on and who's going to do okay, because the world is changing with autos. It just totally is.
And auto company is another thing I'd never buy.
Right. But that's my point. It's always been in transition, but I think it's worse. It's in secular decline right now. What else is in secular decline? We got to be thinking about that all the time. Energy is, no question about it, because we're talking about green energies taking more and more. Putting holes in the earth is still something we need to do, but not like we did. And when you look at the capital usage for the big oil companies, they're not doing very well over the last 20 years. It's in secular decline. don't really want to be there. Just because it appears cheap doesn't mean it is. So we do want to be careful there, but I think the point is you find a company that's you still have confidence in that's not in secular decline. It's a cyclical situation. Then we go ahead and own it on those dips, and that makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, you mentioned 3M. I got it in 2009. It's up 168%, and the dividend is 9.67 at this point. So
there you go. I thought you said 90s. It was 2009. No. Good hit.
Yeah, 2009.
Good job.
So anyway, I mean, that was one of my first ones, and again, an emotional thing because I relate to the reel-to-reel tapes they used to sell.
Well, I used to. That's right. There you go. Yeah, yeah. If you were in the who am I thinking? For example, I mean, secular decline is a great one. Is Blockbuster, you know, that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
Books, secular decline. You know, that we'd take them in a different delivery system now. Newspapers. Do you really want to own a newspaper? You got to be kidding me. Not unless you're Bezos and you want your political opinion to be pitched every day, then and you have $1 billion, so who cares? You can buy one. But if you're really trying to make money, you don't want to buy a newspaper. That's my opinion. We get too many different news sources online, not a newspaper.
Yeah, that drives my my financial analyst or advisor crazy when I tell her I'm not all that interested in money. I like a certain company. Well, anyway, Dave,
Tim,
have a great weekend.
You have a great weekend yourself. Thanks for the call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Dean, you hang on. We have to take a break here for Fox News, and we'll be right back. We've got three lines available. Give us a call. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number, 580-KIDO. Let's go to Dean in Payette. Dean, thanks for holding.
Yeah, Dave, I was going to ask you anyway, and you kind of touched on it, but with the market doing this well, or, you know, the economy doing this well, why does the national debt keep going up when, even if it's, it should be slowing down, shouldn't it?
It should. You're right. And that's a huge problem. And although I know what the libs will say, it's because of tax cuts. It's not. It's because of spending. We have got to get a handle. In the old days, we spent about 18% of GDP on the government. Okay? We're up to nearly 25%. Obama jacked it up. He was very effective, as people say. You know, he was very effective at doing what he wanted to do, which was to have the government run everything, okay? He did. I mean, he had so many rules, and you can't peel them back in you can't even do it in one term. He had so many regulations put on things. Taxes went up so much. Obamacare was devastating. But when we look at the percentage and you think of our GDP continuing to grow, and yet as a percentage, the government is sucking up well over 20% now, and that is historically not normal for us at all. Thank goodness, because that is a state we don't want to be in. Now, what we have always had trouble in my life is ever getting rid of anything in government. Remember, I just find it weird, okay? So bear with me here, but I find this unbelievable that we literally do this, like with education. We all know this is true. So let's go ahead and pick on education as one piece of government, whether you call it local government or national or whatever you want. It's government. Okay, so here's what it is. Or the city. Boise City's perfect example. We're in a boom town. They can't find enough money to do everything. They just keep growing. The budget just gets more and more. It doesn't matter how much comes in the coffers, and we all know that our tax revenues have gone through, our tax cost has gone absolutely through the roof. I can't wait to get our next property tax bills. Good luck with running on that one, Mayor. But you're really looking at a situation where this has just gotten to the point where only government says, I know education isn't working very well. We need more money. We don't never talk about trying to fix it. We never try to make a change. We just say, yeah, the problem is we don't have enough money. No, that's not necessarily the problem. We need no person, no household, no business, nothing except government simply looks at it and says, we need more money. I know that's broken. Let's put more money into what's broken. We never fix things. That's the problem that we're seeing with the national debt. Now, the good news is this. All we have to do is slow down the growth. We don't even have to cut. Although you'll hear DC going, oh, you're trying to starve the children. There you go, killing the old people again. Push grandma off a cliff. Here we go. All of that when we simply say what? we're not going to do the automatic 5% increase every year. That, to them, if we simply a cut is, if you and I are talking and we say we got to cut our budget 10%, you and I both speaking English, Dean, would actually understand that that meant if we spent $100, we would now be spending 90, right?
Right.
That would be normal. Human beings think that way. That's not what the government says. If we're going to cut 10%, that would be after we assumed the 5% increase. Okay? So a cut is we're cutting Medicare by not increasing it. We're cutting the food stamp program by not increasing it automatically. And this is part of the dialogue that is a big problem. We're going to kill all the old people. We have got to have some fundamental reform. I get that. That is my concern, my biggest concern. But the point is here that the deficit is coming down. The news last month, you're never going to hear it on regular news at all. It was below expectations was the amount of the deficit because revenue has increased with the tax cut faster than people thought because the economy boost. Economic boost, whether it was Kennedy for the Democrats, whether it was Reagan with the Republicans, cut taxes, revenues increased. We just have to control the spending side. It really does work because the economy grows faster, revenues grow faster, everybody is happier, and it works better. But we can't do this without controlling our costs or our spending.
So it is coming down a little bit.
It is. The rate of growth has slowed. The rate where we are, we're expected to be, because here's what happens if you are a liberal. A tax cut means you lose money, period. There's no dynamism to it. A tax increase means we get it all. There's no dynamism, meaning people hide it. They work for cash. They stop working. They retire. They get out. They won't expand. The economy slows and revenues go down. It happens every time if you raise taxes. But that is not going to, that doesn't serve the liberal agenda. It is much more difficult for all of us who want to deal in a real world, whether you agree with me politically or don't. Most people would agree, I want the real facts. I really want to know. What will happen if we have a tax cut? What will happen is that we will get a temporary, very short-term, reduction in the income to the United States. But it will actually increase over time because the economy will be unhinged and it will grow faster. People will expand more and hire more employees, et cetera, et cetera. And all of this is true. It's historically been true, not just under Republicans, but under Democrats. And we saw it with Obama. With increasing taxes, the economy barely grew. And now we're seeing it with Trump. Nothing's ever happened like this. It's a perfect experiment where this late in an economic cycle, we've actually seen the economy accelerate. That's never happened before. It always decelerates. But with the tax cut, it accelerated. And anybody that was politically against Trump hates that because now they have to fight a good economy.
Right. Well, I haven't looked at one for a while. Okay, so I'm a simple guy. You've seen those national debt clocks, right?
Yeah.
So if we looked at one right now, would that number that's just spinning out of control, would it be stopped or would it be slowed down?
No, it's spinning out of control. It's just slower spin than it was.
And
the overall number is lower than the geniuses said it would be because, again, we live in a world where I hate Donald Trump, and so we're going to explode the national debt, and the economy won't grow, and jobs won't be created, and when that happens, we just pretend that never happened. And so we're not going to hear about it, but it is getting better. It's not good, and it is my big concern that we don't deal with the out-of-control spending. We are not dealing with it because the big three are the problem: Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Those are the problems.
Yeah.
Everything else is actually just dumb to talk about, but we have to talk about it because that's what the president does. The president's going to fix certain things. That's what they're going to do, but that's not going to fix the debt at all. To tinker around the edges and figure out ways to save a little bit in the defense. That's a little bit. The amount, the what we call discretionary spending is minuscule in the budget. It's minuscule. It's rounding errors, compared to those big three, the entitlements. And that's what we have to address, and it's a tough question. It's a third rail of politics, blah, blah, blah. These are the difficult things. So the national debt, I don't worry about yet. There's no reason to worry about it. But I do worry about all of this talk of free education, pay off this, reparations for all. You know, if you've been offended, just put your hand out. We'll put some money in it. And it just this whole debate is problematic. We don't have the money for it. We shouldn't have the money for it. And we're not dealing with the entitlement programs. It's entrenched. It's not good for politics. And so if you're a politician, why would you touch it? I can't really blame them. Until the United States says, do something about this, and we know there'll be a little bit of pain in one area or another. But overall, my kids and my grandkids, I've never met an old person that said, to heck with my grandkids, I don't give a rip about my grandkids. I don't care. Yeah. Saddle them with another $20 trillion of debt. That's what I want to do. Just send me money. I hate my grandkids. No, I've never heard that. I haven't even felt that. You know, it's kind of like people that go around saying, well, I really, 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 really want to send my kids to college. And they really go out and go buy boats and pile up debt, and they do all kinds of nonsensical things, and then say, wow, I don't have any money. Well, you never intended to put your kids through school, but we're actually not going to say that out loud. Who says, I don't really care about my kids? Everybody loves their grandkids. They love their grandkids. They want a better world for their grandkids. Grandkids change people's lives, right? They do.
Yeah.
And so I really think we just get this wrong as a national debate. When we want to go after it, we don't want to kill our grandkids, and we're not going to kill the old people to do it. But we've got to make some reforms. Got to.
Boy, you know, as smart as those founders were when they set term limits on the president, why they didn't do it on the rest of them guys, I'll never figure it out.
I hear you. I hear you. But it's on us, man. It's not on us. We got to get them out if you want them out. Dean, thanks for the call.
Hey, have a good day, Dave.
You do the same. Okay, thanks. Bye now. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Nice long segment coming up, ending today's program. So if you have a comment or question, love to hear from you. The board is clear, 580-KIDO. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Hey, we do have plenty of time left in today's program. If you want to ring up, we'd love to take your call. It's 580-KIDO. All right, and I've got an email here. Interesting one here comes from Mike. Good morning, Dave. My son-in-law is exploring another job. The potential employer has asked if he wants to participate in the 401k program. They have offered him $4 additional per hour if he does not. I do not know what kind of advice to give him with that scenario. I know it depends on your hourly rate, but what should the guidelines be for a job that pays $20 to $30 per hour? Interesting. This is a puzzle to me, though. Mike, thanks for the email. I'm not sure what the motivation would be to say don't participate. Okay, so let's say they're doing some kind of match, but would it really equal $4 an hour? That would be some kind of match. You know what I mean? I mean, if you're putting some away and then you'll match 50% up to a certain amount, right, like most of them do, if there is a match, it's going to be a pretty small percentage compared to $4 an hour. So I'm not sure. And then the opposite of that, then the other point of that is that in a 401k, and I'm assuming they have a 401k, and it, not just starting one up, because there is cost to start one up. But why you would not want people to participate in that versus giving them money, I'm not sure. Because what you wind up doing also with the vesting program is it kind of, you know, those matches that they put in kind of help tie people to the company, right? Because you don't get to keep all that money right off the bat. So, you know, you have to be there like 5 years typically, right? So before you get all of it. So you'd have somebody who'd kind of tie to the company. You're paying out more to keep them out of a plan. And then the other piece is for high earnings people, usually the owners of the company, right, are not going to be able to put as much in a 401k if their employees don't participate. It's a cap that they have that based on the overall averages of your 401k, and that includes people that don't participate. You know, it's not the zeros. The zeros all matter, as well as the two people that only put in 2%. So that caps higher income people. So I'm not sure we're hearing the whole story here. That's why I'm puzzled. Okay, so the answer is take the $4 and put it in a Roth IRA. Bam, you're done. I would take the $4 every day because it's more money. It's just got to be more than a match, right? So anyway, that would be my advice. But I think something's missing here, Mike. I appreciate the question, but something is missing in my mind. Because I can't, you know what I mean? If you look in something going, this doesn't make any sense. So something here doesn't make any sense. Anyway, thank you for the email. If you have any email questions, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. But during the week, if you have questions, comments, hey, would you cover this on the next program? That's at petsofinancial.com. And in addition to that, we've got articles and calculators to help you with your financial planning, as well as our podcasts of previous shows. And sometimes we highlight things. Up there still is, it's an hour long. No, it's an hour. It's 40 minutes. I did a show a while back. And once in a while, we refresh it on equity indexed annuities, really all annuities. But this is the focus. Look, I annuities in some cases are okay. I've not met an equity index annuity that I've ever thought made sense, ever, because they're very high commission. And I even saw one the other day that is has no commission, right? It's for registered investment advisors like me, okay, where we don't collect commissions of any kind. And so we looked at it, and I talked about it here on air probably 2 months ago, because I looked at it and I said, I promised I would look hard when they made the commissions a reasonable amount, when they took away some of the, you know, you can't get out for 10 years and it can't work. Well, I'll take a look and see. We did. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. I wouldn't sell one of those. I mean, not sell, because you don't, anyway, I wouldn't use that. But there is a line, and it's not, you know, I don't, Fisher doesn't have a very good track record, is very, very expensive and all these things. So I don't want to overdo it, but he does have a line here that I, and what a marketing budget, isn't it? But one of the things that he does really well is he beats up on annuities all the time. All the time. And gets the word out. But one thing he says is that there's almost always a better way to do what you're trying to do. And I really want to drive this point forward. Now, you have to be careful with it. There's some structured notes out there that are bad, that have a lot of caps, that don't work as well as you think they're going to work, and maybe have a whole lot of commission built in. Not a whole lot. That world is a lot less. But let me just put it this way. There's a lot of competition out there in structured notes now, so the margins have come down, meaning it's a much better product. We've talked about it. I don't have enough time to talk about it in detail. We've talked about it before. You can check for it in past podcasts. Or call me next week and say, I want to hear more about that, and we'll be happy to I'll be happy to answer that question. But the point is this: structured notes can even be structured as CDs. Meaning it's 100% government guaranteed, up to $250,000, just like your CD is, that you can't lose. You can fully invest in the market, and you can fully participate in the market, and it isn't full of those caps, and it doesn't have commission, and all of those things. If you really feel that I need to have that kind of security, my point being is, just as Ken Fisher said, there's almost always a better way to do what you're trying to do. Now, I may say, don't do that, because you're guaranteeing more than you need to, type of thing, and maybe we can structure it a different way. But my point is, if you want some downside protection, there's a better way to do it than putting yourself in an annuity that's high commission, doesn't do what it's promised to do, because the insurance laws are so impotent. They're so impotent. They just really don't go after the bad guys. Doesn't it ever strike people as, why is it that the equity annuity index pimps don't carry any certifications, don't carry security licenses? Do you know why? They would have to disclose that these products don't work the way they say they work. They'd have to disclose that your upside cap, that I make 10% commissions. The insurance company makes a gob of money on these. Who pays the 10? You do, of course. What are you talking about? Instead, they say, oh, no, the insurance company pays me. Really? As if the person, right. So the name of the insurance company signed the check, but it was sucked out of your proceeds, given to the insurance company who wrote the check, so therefore you didn't pay for it. I mean, when somebody says something like that, then what else are they lying about? Everything. You don't lie about one thing. You lie about everything. You're honest or you're dishonest. It's not a in-between thing. So anyway, better ways of doing it. I've been wanting to talk about that again. You want to talk more? Give me a call next week and we'll do it. Right now, we're going to say adios. I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. Thank you for listening. And do check it out, petzofinancial.com. If you have any comments or questions.